patented for continuous systems. And at the end, if time permits, of course, I will talk about the variational derivative subject to some additional conditions. So let me remind you that last time we finished with writing down the Lagrangian for the functions q1, qn, and their derivatives with respect to time, and showed that the Euler Lagrange equations arising as a result of variations have this form. So strictly speaking, those equations are quite complicated second-order differential equations, and in general, it's not an easy task to solve them. So solution of those equations is called integration of the equations of motion, because these Euler Lagrange equations in mechanics are quite often called the equations of motion. However, there are cases in which the solution can be considerably simplified. This is the most general form of our Lagrangian. It depends on the set of generalized coordinates q1 through qn, that are functions of time, their derivatives, and possibly their time itself. But let's ask ourselves the question, what happens if the Lagrangian does not depend on time explicitly? So this dependence is simply absent. So let's consider whether we can obtain something that will definitely ease our task of obtaining the exact solution of Euler Lagrange equations. So let's consider one special case. Special cases. Case one. L does not depend on T explicitly. This means that the partial derivative of L with respect to T, the last variable in the list, is simply absent. So we have dL over dt is equal to zero. So let's take the full, I emphasize, the full derivative of L with respect to time. We are going to have dL over dt is equal to, so not partial derivative. This partial derivative means the differentiation with respect to this last argument that we do not have for this case. So the L over dt is going to be equal to this sum. We first take the partial derivative with respect to each qi, then multiply by qi dot, plus take the partial derivative with respect to qi dot, and multiply by qi double dot. So because partial derivative of L over dt is zero, there will be nothing else. So this is what we have. But from the other side, we have an Euler Lagrange equation. Let's denote them as star with index I. So what we do next, we multiply each of Euler Lagrange equations by qi dot and sum all of them. So we have sum over I, qi dot, d over dt, dl over dqi dot, minus qi dot, dl over dqi. Right? We just multiplied by qi dot each Euler Lagrange equation and summed over all equations. And this is equal to zero. So let's look at this term, this first term, and rewrite it in such a way that d over dt sum of I Q I dot DL over D Q I dot minus sum over I. And here we have, we just simply transform this derivative d over dt for this term. They basically differentiate by parts. And have here dl over dqi dot qi double dot plus qi dot dl over dqi. Right, and this is equal to zero. But what is this? So this is nothing else, nothing else. This last term, then dl over dt. Right, because of this definition. Hence, we can write that d over dt of L minus sum over I dl over d qi dot, basically this term, times qi dot equal to zero. So in other words, what we have that the full time derivative of this quantity called L minus I dl over dqi dot times qi dot is equal to zero, meaning that this thing is constant. This thing E is called energy. Energy of our mechanical system. And is conserved if Lagrangian does not depend on time explicitly. So what we have in fact done from the general point of view of variational calculus, we obtained the first integral of the equations of motion. By these algebraic manipulations, manipulations with derivatives, we obtained the first integral of equations of motion. And this first integral is called energy. So if we have our Lagrangian that describes the motion of, say, a single particle, and we have only one generalized coordinate, q, then obtaining the first integral and knowing that E is conserved considerably simplifies the obtaining of exact solution of the equations of motion. So essentially, this first integral allows us to reduce the second order differential equation in general to a first order one. Any questions? So let's consider then the other, also very important and simple case. Case two, L does not depend on some generalized coordinate qj. So if in general our Lagrangian is a function of many generalized coordinates, but it may not depend explicitly from on one of the coordinates. So this means that the partial derivative of dl over dqj is simply equal to zero. Then from equations of motion, Euler-Lagrange equations, it is easier straightforwardly to obtain that dp Pj over dt is equal to zero, where Pj equal to dl over dqj dot is called momentum. Or better to say generalized momentum. And coordinate qj in this case is called the cyclic coordinate. So there, this derivation is very, very simple. We simply used the Euler-Lagrange equation, but we have one more conserved quantity, Pj. And in some cases, even if L depends on many variables, this allows us to simplify the task of finding the exact solution to the whole system of equations. So let's try to understand why do we have those conserved quantities. This question on a very, very fundamental level was first asked many years ago by Emmy Noether, who showed that the presence of conserved quantities is the consequence of some kind of symmetries for our system. So let's look. If L does not depend on T explicitly, then this means that our system is invariant with respect to time translations. Invariance with respect to time translations, in fact, means that the beginning of time, the origin on the time scale, is not defined. So if we make the substitution resulting in shift of time by some constant, then our Lagrangian will not change. Then the conserved momentum. If L does not depend on one of the generalized coordinate Q, this means that we can arbitrarily choose the origin, or better to say, the point where this Q is equal to zero. Basically, if we make the translation in this variable Q, then the Lagrangian will not change. So this is the reason why we have these conserved quantities. Energy and momentum. So Pj is conserved in this case. So, yes. It's just the definition. So sometimes in some textbooks it is not called, in some textbooks it is called, but it is not connected with any of the cycle. No. It's just you. If you have the Lagrangian m x dot squared over two, then it doesn't depend on x. So x in this case. The case also can be called cyclic coordinate. There is nothing to do with cyclic motion. Although if you look at the, say, Lagrangian for a particle moving around the circle, then you can associate the angular variable with some cyclic motion. But it's just a definition, okay? So some textbooks don't tell us about this definition, but some. So, okay, let me now very, very roughly state what Noether's theorem is about and talk about the scheme, how one can obtain the integrals of motion, the conserved quantities, if we detect in our system this or that symmetry. So, Noether's theorem, roughly speaking, put into correspondence the symmetry and conservation laws. Or just conserved quantities. So this very simple statement is the essence of Noether's theorem. It's of course not an exact statement. It's not even a formulation. It's basically the rough scheme that allows us to understand symmetry. That if we have a conservation law, it is a consequence of some kind of a symmetry, and vice versa. So let's consider such a question as Noether strategy to search for the conserved quantities of the integrals of motion if we have a symmetry. So suppose we again have a very general Lagrangian, just very general. Then step one will be to observe that L is invariant under the transformations Qi to Qi plus epsilon I with epsilon I equal to constant. Just we shift all our generalized coordinate by some constant and check if our Lagrangian stays invariant. Or we can shift the time itself by some constant, or t going to t plus epsilon t, if we want to seek for energy as an integral of motion. Then step two, so assuming, obtain the variation of our action. And let me remind you that we have an action from this Lagrangian as an integral of Lagrangian over dt from some initial moment of time to some final moment of time. So obtain delta s under qi as a function of t going as a function of t going to qi of t plus epsilon I also as a function of t, keeping the boundary conditions fixed, meaning that epsilon I ti equal to epsilon I tf equal to zero. Or if we consider the shift in time, or qi as a function of t going to qi as a function of t plus qi dot epsilon t as a function of t. So basically, when we consider the shift in time, then we vary delta s adding to qit this term, the first derivative times epsilon t. So what we essentially do, we first observe some symmetries of our Lagrangian, either the invariance with respect to some simultaneous shift of coordinates, or the invariance with respect to shift in time. And then assume that those shifts depend on time. Depend on time, but disappear at the time boundaries. So this is just the trick. So I strongly recommend you to pay attention to this strategy, because this strategy is essentially used, well, with possibly some modifications, in many situations, in field theory, in string theory, and so forth. Now Now, what we should assume at the first step. So assuming that qi as a function t satisfy so Euler Lagrange equations. So equations integrate by parts to get rid of time derivatives epsilon I dot or and epsilon t dot. So we can integrate by parts, and the terms containing the limits on tf and ti will disappear because of our fixed boundary conditions. So once we assume that our original unshifted qi of t satisfy the Euler Lagrange equation, we must have that delta s is equal to zero when we vary delta s under these conditions. So as our last step will be the following. Delta s is equal to zero. So this is the consequence of assumption that our original qi satisfy the Euler Lagrange equation. Delta s must be then equal to zero. So delta s equal to zero, hence, assuming that epsilon I or epsilon t are arbitrary, equate to zero what stands before them. So as a result, if you equate to zero what stands before them, those will be equations that are conserved quantity, that will determine for us the conserved quantity. So this is the practical implementation of this Noether's strategy, how to find the conserved quantity after we did detect some kind of a symmetry for our Lagrangian. So in general, the symmetries can be quite complicated and quite unusual and may not be even probably seen if we look at everything from the first sight. But it is essential that if we detect such a symmetry, then we considerably simplify our life if we want to solve the equation or the equations of motion for a complicated system as precisely as possible. So let me illustrate this strategy just as a very simple example. That is essentially written on that board. So just example of application of this strategy, consider the Lagrangian example for the Noether's strategy. So consider the case in which my momentum is conserved. Basically, L as a function of only one generalized variable and does not depend on Q explicitly. So L as a function of Q dot only. So first, we observe that it is invariant if we set Q to Q plus epsilon, with epsilon is constant, right? Right, because it contains only Q dot, then for constant epsilon, epsilon dot is zero. Then consider the transformation Q as a function of T going to Q as a function of T plus epsilon as a function of T, and such that epsilon of Ti equal to epsilon of Tf equal to zero. Then consider the variation delta S. Delta S is equal to the integral of Ti, Tf. And here we take the variation, the derivative with respect to Q dot, the L over dQ dot, times epsilon dot, because the change in Q dot is simply epsilon dot dt. Then at the first step, we integrate by parts this term and have the integral Ti from Ti to Tf dt minus d over dt dl dq dot. And this must be equal to zero, because we assumed that Q, our original Q, satisfies the Euler-Lagrange equation. Right? And not to forget, of course, epsilon here, epsilon. We basically flipped the derivative onto that term. Epsilon is arbitrary. Epsilon is arbitrary. Hence, we have that dt, d over dt, dl dq dot equal to zero. This example is very simple. And of course, we did not have to use the Noether strategy to derive that the generalized momentum is conserved. It is clear from Euler-Lagrange equation that is given there. But this example is useful because it allows us to understand how to apply this strategy and how to not to make any confusing mistakes, any stupid mistakes when we do the manipulations. So as a very good exercise, and I used to take the orange chalks when I ask you to do exercise. Exercise, apply the Noether's strategy to show that E is conserved. Is conserved for L equal to L of Q, comma Q dot. It will also a very, very good exercise. So I will start talking next about the Lagrangians for continuous systems. So if I have time at the very end, I will show how to use the Noether strategy to derive the energy momentum tensor for continuous systems. But this is only if I have time. So any questions at this point? David, am I writing in big letters, or there have been no complaints? Okay, so far everyone's happy. So good. So yeah, okay. So the other topic is Euler-Lagrange equations for continuous systems. So this topic is very interesting because, first of all, it has a lot of applications, especially in hydrodynamics, electrodynamics of continuous media, so to name a few, in the theory of elasticity. But conceptually, it is not much more difficult, because what we had before, we already considered the Lagrangian that depends on many generalized variables, Q1 through Qn, right at the upper right corner. So what if those variables, many variables, infinite amount of variables, represent some kind of motion over some kind of a portion of some kind of medium? In this case, it is natural to assume that we deal with Lagrangian of effectively many variables, but each variable is related to some kind of a point in space. So when we talk about the Lagrangians for continuous media, then we typically deal with the following actions. I will keep the letter Q, the same integral over time from some initial moment of time to the final moment of time. And here we have not many discrete variables, but we have the integral over some space that is d-dimensional, ddx, and Lagrangian. It's not strictly speaking a Lagrangian. I will tell in a moment how it is called. L, that depends on Q as a function of x and time, then the derivatives with respect to coordinates Q, x, t, then the derivative with respect to time of Q, x, t, and possibly x and t themselves. So what we have here can you see this, right? This formula in the corner. So x is a point in the dimensional space. Then this is the simplified notation of Q, is dq over the ith component of coordinate. Diq is equal to dq over dxi. And by q dot, I imply the partial, not full derivative here, but partial derivative of q with respect to time. Now, this calligraphic L is called the Lagrangian. Lagrangian density. At the same time, the integral of Lagrangian density over space is called the Lagrangian itself. So this is a quite typical. Of course, the Lagrangian can depend of many variables that are the functions of time and space. The Lagrangian can depend on higher derivatives with respect to coordinates. It is totally possible in the theory of elastic media. Good. But most likely, we are dealing with those kinds of Lagrangians. So if we have Lagrangians, then the next step will be to derive the Euler-Lagrange equations to obtain the equations of motion. So our Euler-Lagrange equations are obtained if we change Q as a function of xt to Q the function of x comma t plus delta Q, function of x and t. And we again imply the fixed boundary condition. So this means that at the moments of time ti and tf, our delta q is zero. For each x, delta q of x tf equal to delta q of x and ti, they're all equal to zero for any x. And the second condition requires us to specify what do we mean by integration over some portion of space omega. So if we have some kind of portion of space in d-dimensional space and call it omega, then the boundary is called d omega. And this is the boundary. We integrate over this area. Omega can be infinite. In this case, its boundary lies at infinity. This is also a typical situation. So we imply that delta q of x at t at all points on the boundary, x belonging to the boundary, is zero for any t. Or in other words, if our area of integration is infinite, then the variation disappears at infinity. Basically, we assume that nothing happens at infinity. So let's calculate delta S, and it's a good thing if I have unfortunately I will hardly have space here, so let me bring the front board back. So delta S is equal to the integral from ti to tf dt, then integral over space ddx. And here we first differentiate the Lagrangian density over q, delta q, plus we differentiate over all coordinates, over all derivatives diq. So here we mean that we take the, by the way, so where is our? Yes, since our Lagrangian depends on diq, here, just right here, we take over all such derivatives and have d I delta q. We just used that the change in diq is di with respect to delta q plus the derivative with respect to q dot delta q dot. Right? Then we, as usual, integrate by parts with respect to time using this condition. And another thing we do, we apply the so-called Gauss's theorem to integrate by parts this term. So So what we have the following. So sum over I dl over d dqi di delta q equal to sum over I di of this thing dl over d diq delta q minus sum over I delta q di of this thing dl d diq. So let's denote this thing as some kind of a vector AI. In this case, we use the divergence theorem or Gauss's theorem. So we use that the integral over omega of d AI over dxi d dx is equal to the integral over the boundary of this region. Of such a quantity, AI and I ds, where ds is the infinitesimal element on the boundary. This is the s, and ni are the components of the normal vectors to this boundary. So but this is zero, why? Because delta q are zeros on the boundary. Hence, ai at the boundary is zero because of boundary conditions, the condition two we specified there. So we, as a result of integration by parts, have the following. Delta S equal to integral over time d dx omega. And here we have dl over dq minus d over dt dl over dq dot minus di dl over d diq. Delta Q. So our Euler, hence our Euler Lagrange equations mean that I don't want to rewrite all this, so I will put this in the box and say that this is equal to zero. The equality to zero give our Euler Lagrange equation for the Lagrangian describing the evolution of continuous system. So this what stands here in the left hand side and zero in the right hand side gives us the Euler Lagrange equation. So any questions at this point? So that, let me make just a one remark. Just a remark. Quite often, especially in field theory, the space and time variables are considered on the same footing. So here I imply that we describe mechanical systems, regular mechanical systems in Euclidean space. So we say we don't distinguish between covariant and contravariant in the SI, but In field theory, space and time is considered on the equal footing. So what we can do, we can, assuming, of course, Euclidean space, for people who know what's the difference between Euclidean and Minkowski spaces, we can introduce the so-called D plus one vector, unifying space and time. And in this case, the action can be written in the following form: the integral over D plus one dimensional space, call it X. And Lagrangian density is written in a more compact form: Q D mu Q X mu. So, and the Euler Lagrangian equations are also written as a result in a more compact form: D L calligraphic over D Q minus D mu D L over D D mu Q equal to zero. Euler Lagrange equation. So during today's tutorial, you will practice, based on several examples, how to obtain the Euler Lagrange equation for a specific system. So if you are given the actions describing specific systems, say in hydrodynamics and elasticity theory. So I have exactly 15 minutes. So what would you like me to do? Talk about the Lagrange multipliers. You're going to have an exercise, or derive the energy momentum tensor for this action.
Energy momentum tensor.
Then during the tutorial, you will have a problem that involves Lagrange multipliers. So if you have any questions, then I will explain it down the road, because this concept is very simple. And energy momentum tensor, so the derivation is a very useful thing to look at it now. So in the course on field theory, you will be deriving with the similar Lagrangian, but only in Minkowski space. I will do the derivation in Euclidean space. In Euclidean space for this kind of a Lagrangian. For this, yes, good, very good. For this kind of a Lagrangian, so I don't have the necessity to keep track of the covariant and contravariant indices for simplicity. So it simplifies our life. So okay, let's do this calculation. Okay, good. Okay, everything is fine with my microphone. So we have shown that when Lagrangian for regular mechanical systems describing the system of, say, point-like particles, the motion of point-like particles, we showed that if it doesn't depend on time, then there is a first integral called energy, right? So what happens if, we have the action d plus one x of this Lagrangian density q d mu q. So no explicit dependence on coordinates. So we don't have the explicit dependence on coordinates x nu. So what happens in this case? In this case, we can shift, observe, according to the Noether strategy. First, observe that our Lagrangian L is invariant when x mu goes to x mu plus epsilon mu is constant. First thing. Second thing. We generalize this by considering the shift. Consider x mu going to x mu plus epsilon mu depending on x. That depends on all components of x. With a mu of x equal to 0 at the boundaries. Well, here the boundary, I will call the in d plus 1 the dimensional space that involves simultaneously space and time. I'm considering space and time at the equal footing. Consider this shift in x mu. It's just the rule of the Noether strategy. And hence, in accordance to this, consider q x mu going to q x mu plus d nu. Yeah, I decided to use index nu, not to confuse with x mu. Actually, it's better to simply have q x and q x here, so to avoid confusion. Times epsilon nu of x. Yeah. D nu over q of x times epsilon nu. We imply summation over repeated indices. And this is what I am going to do. Einstein summation. Then let's do the following. Let's vary. Let's consider delta S. Consider delta S. So delta S. So d plus 1 x, we first differentiate over q. And then, since delta q is there, we straightforwardly already write d mu q times epsilon mu. I changed the summation index from nu back to mu, plus dl over d mu q, d mu, d nu, d mu q, epsilon mu. So dl over d mu q times d mu of this thing. So, and let me rewrite it as follows. d plus 1 x, again the same. Plus, and here write explicitly d over d nu q. Here we just differentiate this product d mu d nu q times epsilon mu. We apply, of course, summation over both here mu and nu. Plus dl over d nu q d mu q times d nu epsilon. But we know that Lagrangian density but does not depend on x nu explicitly. So we can write d mu l equal to dl over dq d mu q plus the derivative dl over d nu q d nu d mu q. So I hope that this is clear. What I did here is relatively clear. L depends and q on q and d nu q. So I first, by taking the full derivative with respect to x mu, I first differentiate over q, then differentiate q over mu, then differentiate over each d nu q, and then differentiate each d nu q over d mu, or over x mu. So from this, we can write that this term dl over d d mu q d mu d nu q times epsilon mu equal to, I simply multiply this equation by epsilon mu and sum, so that I could plug this back into this equation instead of the second term. So this is equal to d mu over L times epsilon mu minus dl over d q d mu q epsilon mu. So if we take this term, so that I could see, and plug here, we will see that this will cancel this. This cancels this. If this is plugged here. Good, already a simplification. But what we are left to do, look, we see here the derivative over nu with respect to epsilon. What we do to get rid of derivatives with respect to epsilon, we integrate by parts. On the third step of the Noether's strategy. So we do the vote, we integrate by parts. Integrate by parts. By flipping the derivative with respect to nu from epsilon to all this guy. Not forgetting about the minus sign, of course. And not forgetting that we have this thing as well. So what we then have, we have. Mm-hmm. We have delta S equal to d plus 1 x. Here d mu L times epsilon mu minus d nu. This is the differentiation over nu component from what stands there, dl over dd nu q, right? Right, d mu q, this thing must be differentiated with respect to nu, times epsilon mu. And as a latch, as a final step, we should look finally at this term. You see here, we have the derivative with respect to mu, So of the Lagrangian density with respect to x mu, and here we have the derivative with respect to x nu. Let's write the following. And I will take the liberty to write. I still have time. Not time, space. I have still space for one more formula. So d plus one x. And here I write what stands here in the curly brackets as follows: d over nu l delta mu nu. I simply write. So simply have d nu by introducing the Kronecker symbol minus the same thing, dl over d nu q, d mu q. It's better to put brackets here, times epsilon mu. Epsilon mu is arbitrary, so the final step of the Noether strategy is to assume that Q satisfies the equations of motion, and the variation must be zero. Because epsilon mu is arbitrary, we have a remarkable thing: d mu of t mu nu equal to zero, where t mu nu equal to Lagrangian itself times Kronecker symbol delta mu nu minus dl over d mu q times d nu q times d mu q. And this is the energy momentum tensor. It is conserved. Note, it's not a scalar. The a scalar we obtain when we have the energy for the system, for the Lagrangian describing the system of moving discrete particles. Here, we obtain for the continuous medium that the role of energy for the system we considered before is played by the energy momentum tensor. So it is called energy momentum because it incorporates on the equal footing the conservation of both energy and possibly momentum. So this is the energy momentum tensor. You will see a very, very analogous derivation in the field theory course. And at this point, my course is over, and thank you for your attention.